Good afternoon, everyone, and happy Father's Day. Welcome to a live edition of Weigh In Sports. And we are at a different time than our normal 9 p.m. Eastern time. It is 5:30 Eastern, and we thought we'd do an early show tonight due to the holiday. And there's some other things going on, so just wanted to let everyone know happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Make sure you tell your dad you love him and thank him for all he's done for you. And today's show, we will have Cuervo. From that being said, he'll be one of the co-hosts as well as Jonathan. He's a regular on our show, so we're going to be all together, and we will be talking some college football, guys. It is getting very close to the season. We're 70-plus days away, not many left. Anytime it gets under the triple digits, I get very excited. So we're getting close to the time for college football, and now the talk will be heating up. So we're going to have Cuervo on from – he's on campus with Cuervo. He does his own show. So we're going to break down some college football, maybe some recruiting rankings. We're going to discuss the NBA Finals tonight, Game 5, who's going to win, who has the advantage. I mean, a lot to discuss. I was wrong on the last game. I really thought San Antonio was going to take a 3-1 lead just after I watched – just the way I watched Miami play in Game 3. It just looked like they might have cashed it in. So – a lot of different opinions on this show. We're going to break it down from Cuervo and Jonathan as well just to see what they think about this Game 5. And the Game 5 winner, is that who's going to really win the whole entire NBA Finals? I think this could be the game. So I said that about Game 3, but Miami showed new life, so we will talk about that. We'll try to touch on some Major League Baseball. And since Jonathan and Cuervo are big hockey fans, actually – Blackhawk fans, we'll let them talk a little hockey. So glad everyone could join us tonight. And sorry for the inconvenience at the time is, but if you miss it live, you can always catch it in the archive. And just to give you a little preview of what's to come in the upcoming episodes, we're probably going to do a show Wednesday night at 9 Eastern. But next Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, we have a very special guest, Coach Dana Robinson from My Recruit Video. He'll be back on for his second interview. I think it was last August he interviewed with us before football season, but I'm very excited to have him back on the show. He's going to be discussing his business, actually, how he helps these young high school kids that really don't understand the process, maybe. The parents don't understand the process, how he gets those guys noticed, how he gets them a scholarship most of the time. So very excited to have him on. He'll be our guest at 9:30 Eastern next Sunday night. And in future episodes as well, we're going to have J.C. Sherbert from CBS. He's going to be joining us, as well as Tom Luganbill from ESPN. So we're going to talk a lot of college football from now until the season heats up. And you know definitely we're going to talk about it when it starts. So a lot going on. Cuervo's joining us shortly. Jonathan's with me now. How's everything going, Jonathan?
Everything's going really, really, really well, Brian. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, man. I went and watched Man of Steel today. Great movie, by the way. Have you got to see it?
Really? I will have to go see it then.
I liked it. I really did. It was a good movie. It's a long movie. It's about 2.5 hours almost, but time flies by when you watch a good movie. But Cuervo will be joining us shortly. Like I said, we will be talking some college football when he gets on. And Jonathan, right now, tonight at 8 Eastern, we have Game 5 of the NBA Finals. I was wrong on last Game 4. I really thought San Antonio was going to take that 3-1 lead. I think you chose Miami. I can't remember. But tell me tonight, did Miami turn a corner? Did something happen and they finally realized how to play as a team? What happened in Game 4, in your opinion, that caused them to play that well?
What happened in Game 4 was Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade saved themselves from being traded. They both did. They both had great games. Dwayne Wade showed the Dwayne Wade of old. I felt nostalgic watching the 2006 Heat all over again, the way Dwayne Wade was playing. Unfortunately, I do not believe they turned a corner. I believe that the Heat are in another series like the Eastern Conference Finals, or is it every other series? Whoever wins Game 1 is going to win Game 7. Well, San Antonio won Game 1, so I'm leaning on them to win Game 7.
Well, Cuervo, looking at this series, I know you picked Miami to win this Game 4, and you were right. They're 2-2 now. So what are you looking for tonight? What does San Antonio have to do to rebound from that disappointing performance in Game 4? Is Tony Parker's health the missing, I guess, the X factor in this game?
Without a doubt, Brian. I think between his health and just containing the big three in general, because I think San Antonio, I mean, obviously they got away from that in game four because the big three of Miami combined for 85 points, guys. That's a lot of points for the big three to combine for. So they got to find a way to get back to, well, what worked in games one and three, and get back to those fundamentals. And, you know, then, and if they do that, then, you know, San Antonio's got a great chance to win.
Yeah. I mean, looking at it, I mean, I really believe San Antonio was going to take game four. I was passionate about it, actually. But as I was watching the game, or actually listening to the game with my power being out on my iPhone, I could just tell and listen to some people talk that Miami, just, I mean, maybe they have their swagger back. I just wonder if Dwayne Wade can do that two games in a row, because he showed up once every now and then. He hasn't shown up like this at all. I mean, Jonathan, is he healthy enough really to turn in a performance like this again on the road against a veteran San Antonio team?
I actually don't believe his knee is healthy enough for him to keep this up, unfortunately, because I really don't have any ill feelings towards Dwayne Wade. I really don't, guys. I grew up, you know, growing up after Tracy McGrady and all of them kind of walked into, you know, the retirement home, I picked up Dwayne Wade as my favorite player. I just don't think he's healthy enough. It's a great performance. I believe if given the opportunity, he'll do this in game six or game seven, but I don't think he'll be able to do it tonight.
Yeah, looking at the way this series is going, I mean, I see San Antonio, if they can win tonight, I think they can win one out of two in Miami again. Cuervo, is Miami good enough to win two in a row in this series, or is anything good enough to win two in a row?
I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, I think it's possible. You can't say it's not possible. But, you know, you're just going to have a lot of things go your way in order for that to happen. I mean, let's face it. Tonight, guys, we're going to see the best game of the series. Tonight's going to be the game. So, you know, if you really want to know what each team is made of, then game five is where you're going to find out who, you know, tonight, as they like to say, you're going to separate the men from the boys, and we're going to see who the men are, and we're going to see who the boys are.
Yeah, and that's one reason we're having an early show tonight, so we can watch that game entirely and not be distracted. But Cuervo, Ginobili, I mean, this used to be a big three with the San Antonio. Now he's non-existent. What is it going to take to get him going in this series? Because I believe that's really what it's going to take with Parker being iffy with his injury possibly and Kateris. I think they have to have Ginobili step up and have some great games.
Well, I mean, obviously, Brian, I think his health is an issue, but I think he just needs to get his confidence back, and not just within himself, but his teammates, because I'm sure he knows that everybody around him's thinking, what the hell's going on with you, dude? You know, you haven't performed. You've been scoring minimal points in this finals. We need you, man. So I think as a team, they need to, you know, pick him up and be like, look, everything's going to be all right. And it's got to be on him too, to, you know, want to take, you know, the shots when, you know, if he has an open shot, take it. Don't be afraid and don't hesitate. Don't pass the ball off to somebody else. Just, you know, take that shot if you have the opportunity, because a lot of times you see guys that when they're struggling, they hesitate and they don't want to make the mistakes. They become very passive instead of aggressive. And I think for Ginobili, he's got to be the opposite of that.
Yeah, and looking at it, like Miami, everybody's questioning whether they're a true champion. I think you were. Everybody was really wanting to know if the true champion type team was going to show up, and I believe game four, this Miami team, every time they're backed into a corner, they come out and perform. So looking at that, I really believe it's coaching in a way. I mean, a great team should be able to win when they want to, in a way. They should be able to come out. Miami should have been able to take care of San Antonio in five or six games, and And Jonathan, I believe the coach of Miami is the issue with the consistency of the way they play in big games. I mean, the talent they have is good enough to win when they have to, when they have to dig deep. But tell me about the Spoelstra. I mean, do you think he's really the coach that can motivate these guys?
You know, I think I've said it multiple times. I do not. Spoelstra is Pat Riley's puppet. I don't think that he is the coach for this team. I think they need a better coach. I think Lionel Hollins would be a great fit for them, actually. Doc Rivers, somebody with the experience and the know-how and who's been there. Because, let's face it, this is going to be a team that's going to get young very soon. Mike Miller, Ray Allen, Shane Battier, Juwan Howard, those guys can't hang on forever. And Dwayne Wade's in his mid-30s now and is already showing signs of being injured. So, unless Spoelstra is learning a lot under Riley or Riley's, you know, secretly getting ready for another takeover, I don't think Spoelstra is the coach for Miami.
Well, real quick, final predictions on the series for this Game 5, not the whole series entirely. Cuervo, who are you leaning with tonight to take Game 5?
Well, I'm actually going to go with San Antonio. I mean, I don't see any type of big-time change. We've seen, a pattern of San Antonio winning, then Miami, then San Antonio, Miami. So according to the way things have gone, San Antonio should win this game. But that I haven't paid attention to. That's not why I'm picking the Spurs. I'm picking the Spurs because they understand if they don't win this game tonight, there ain't going to be a game 7 to try and push it to the limit, because they're going back to Miami for the last two games. So San Antonio understands, look, we have to have this game to have any chance to survive these last possibly two games in Miami. So I like the Spurs just because I think their head is going to be in the game a little bit more than the Heat.
And Jonathan, I think he's exactly right. I mean, San Antonio has to win this game or it's over. I mean, Miami can lose this game and still rebound at home for two games. Everybody remember, their spot, game 6 and 7 is in Miami. So, Jonathan, your prediction tonight?
I agree with Cuervo. I have to side with the Spurs tonight. It is, it's the last game in San Antonio. I think that's the biggest thing, because the next two are in Miami. San Antonio is not going to want to go out with a loss. They're going to show resilience and fight of a team that's won 4 championships with Tim Duncan. I expect Tim Duncan to have a big night tonight, guys. I'm talking 30-10. I think Ginobili's going to step it up big time. I'm expecting about 20 points from him. I'm not calling a blowout. Don't get misconstrued in any way. But I expect San Antonio, and I'm a big believer in patterns in sports. So, of course, with this being every other game, San Antonio is the odd game team.
Yeah, and I'm going with San Antonio tonight for reasons you guys said, especially the last game in San Antonio, coming off a loss. Who better than the coach Popovich on your side, man? I mean, as well as I do, he's the best coach in the NBA. San Antonio is not a bunch of scrubs. Tim Duncan hasn't played to his capabilities, yet. So this is a big game for San Antonio. I think they win by at least 8 points. I'm going to put it out there and tell you about 8. And then we're just going to – game 6 is going to Miami, and then it's just going to be a street fight for game 7. I'm excited to see this series if San Antonio can win tonight, because it's just going to be awesome to see LeBron James' back to the wall in 6 and 7, Cuervo. Can you imagine the type of hype that's going to be surrounded by 6 and 7 if they go home down 3-2?
Yeah, it's going to be must-see TV, I'll tell you that. And if it does go to 7, I'll tell you right now, it's going to be, I would say, top 3 of all time as far as TV ratings is concerned. It's going to be top 3 for NBA Finals. It's going to make history, guys. I mean, it's the two best teams in the NBA. We finally got the two best teams, in my opinion. Well, last year, too, with Oklahoma City and Miami. But, between these two teams, there's a lot of talent, a lot of Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame on that floor at one time, in one arena. So is definitely going to be one of the highest rated Game 7s, I think, in history.
So Cuervo, tell me about the legacy of LeBron James. What if he chokes in this series and they end up losing to an old San Antonio team? I mean, how big of a hit does he take?
Well, I think it's a huge hit because if that happens, guys, I mean, you want to talk about, in my opinion, okay, and whenever anybody asks me in the future if he does lose this series, any talks of comparisons to him and one Michael Jeffrey Jordan, it's no longer a conversation, in my opinion. He'll be 1-3. Yeah, 1-3 in NBA Finals if they lose to San Antonio. So, you know, 1-3 versus 6-0. I don't think it's a comparison. I think all talks end.
Yeah, I think especially losing in the fashion. I mean, they were clear-cut favorites before the season started. I mean, every season since he's been there, and now to lose 2 to San Antonio would be huge for him. I mean, he's just showing that, I mean, every time he faces a good coach, he struggles. I mean, look at Indiana's coach. He's up and coming. That team's tough. I don't know, Jonathan. I think LeBron James has to win this series in order to get some street credit back, really.
Well, you know, LeBron can't do it by himself, guys. You know me, I'm not a huge LeBron supporter. I hated the way he left Cleveland. I really, really, really did not like the way he left Cleveland. But I don't think he can win this by himself. I think this would hurt the legacy of Dwayne Wade more. Because, let's face it, Wade has more rings than LeBron, and Wade's considered a top five, you know, and people are saying Wade's a top five shooting guard all time. If he completely throws up duds these last, you know, 2 or 3 games, Where does that leave Wade in conversation? I mean, talk about being a dud, you know?
Yeah, I mean, LeBron James, even though we know that he can't win it by himself, he's going to have to win, or people's not going to look at that. People don't care about who he has around him. They care about he got to a championship and he choked again. It's all on LeBron James because you know why? He's the leader of that team. And he put himself in this position, Cuervo, when he made his dramatic exit out of Cleveland and went to South Beach and took his talents there. I think he's doing this to himself. I mean, if LeBron James was still in Cleveland right now doing this, I think everything would be fine. But the fact is, I mean, he painted himself with this. He wanted this to happen, so he got what he asked for, really.
Not 4, not 5, not 6. We all remember that, right? I mean, we all remember that, do we not?
Yep. Yes,
now it's time to back up what you say. It's time to cash that, you know, how do they say it? Cash that check that your money's right, your mouth is writing. So, you know, you got to go out there and you got to get those titles that you. I wouldn't say promise Miami, but that you said you were going to get for Miami. So, now it's time to put up. But John, going off of what Jonathan said, I think for Dwayne Wade, what this does for him, I don't think his welcome, his stay in Miami is going to be very warm anymore. I think people are going to start to, slowly but surely talk about maybe he needs to go in another direction. Maybe he needs to start off somewhere new, somewhere fresh. That, to my opinion, I think if the Heat lose this series, as far as Dwayne Wade is concerned, I think that's what's going to happen. And then as far as Bosch is concerned, I think we all know that they'll be more than happy to pack his bags up and have him leave town. They're ready for this guy to leave.
I think definitely they are. I think he's ready. I mean, he's just getting older. He's more injury prone, but also he's become a wuss ever since LeBron James came to this team. He's back down, and LeBron James must have some more testosterone than he does because he's just not the same player. But We'll keep on our predictions. We'll watch the game tonight. We'll discuss this game on Wednesday. And I believe game 6 will be on Wednesday night, correct, Cuervo?
Yeah, I want to say either, yeah, Wednesday. I think Tuesday or Wednesday, one of the two.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the travel day, I think they'll give them a travel
Tuesday.
Day and make it Wednesday. Tuesday?
It's going to be Tuesday.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Well, guys, let's switch gears a little bit. And Cuervo's wanting to talk some college football, and I guess I will.
Yay.
You know, I don't like college football that much, but you know, I'll talk it when I need to sometimes. But hey, I want to talk about the Tennessee Volunteers real quick, and who else better to ask questions to than Cuervo himself here, the big Vols fan. So tell us about your new coach, Cuervo, and right now Tennessee's ranked number 2 in some places and 3 in recruiting for the 2014. What's going on with that?
Well, I mean, I just think, you know, bringing in a guy like Butch Jones, it's causing a lot of tension. I haven't really seen, not for this year, you're talking about next year's recruiting class. They got some guys coming in.
They do. They're right now they have four 4-stars, 11-3, and 1 5-star. And right now the top 10 rankings are Texas A&M 1, Texas 2, Tennessee, Michigan, Florida State, Kentucky at number 6. That won't hold up. Alabama 7, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, and Baylor. So, but looking at it, Tennessee, I mean, that's important. I mean, they already have 19 signings for this upcoming class. I mean, oh, their season's almost over recruiting. They can start focusing on 2015. I mean, how important that he goes ahead and nails this class down early?
Well, I think you know, you just got to set the tone in reality. I mean, let's face it, Tennessee football has been pretty disappointing the past, you know, 10 years. And they haven't really done anything since 2002 when they played LSU in the SEC championship and blew that lead to have that shot against the Canes for the national title. Ever since then, it's just gone downhill from there. I mean, you know, all this, you know, stuff coming down with the Alabama thing and then just them, you know, losing a lot of unnecessary games, and it's gone to hell in reality. So I think, you know, just a new culture really is what's starting to change. And I mean, Butch Jones, I mean, look at the success he had, you know, over there in Cincinnati. So, and now he's with the big boys in the SEC, and so far it's looking, you know, it's looking pretty good. Number 7, I'm looking at it right now. It's number 7 in for 2014. So it's looking good, but we'll see what happens.
Well, you look at the schedule of the Volunteers this year. You know, a coach's first year sometimes can be very good, especially a Tennessee team that, I mean, they do have talent on that team. They don't have the 5-stars all over the place. But your expectations being a Tennessee fan, and I know we all have Homer in this a little bit when we talk about our team, but realistically, how many wins would you be satisfied with this year? I mean, you have to go to Oregon. You have to play Oregon on the road, and you always play Florida and Georgia and Alabama. I mean, you play Auburn this year. So tell me the how many wins you're expecting.
Well, first of all, I'm not really too worried about Auburn, but, you know, as far as I'm just teasing you. No,
I wouldn't be either, honestly.
it's going to be a good one, though. You know, and by the way, I'm hoping to be in town for that game, because I know you mentioned it before, so maybe that's what you were talking about. Maybe we'll make that happen, but honestly,
I will be there.
I'll keep it short and simple. I hope Tennessee wins enough games to make a bowl game. That's my expectation as a Vols fan for them this year. I'm not going to say national title. I'm not going to say SEC title. Just get back into the bowl season. Get back into, you know, being a bowl eligible team, and work your way up from there.
I do think you have 6 wins on your schedule. It looks like Austin Peay, Western Kentucky, and South Alabama. Those are 3 of your out-of-conference games, but that kind of strengthens up when you go to Oregon. You know they're going to be stacked. So there's 3 wins, and then you have to find 3 wins when you start looking at teams like Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, Missouri, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Kentucky. I think it's reasonable to say a bowl game is in the future for them, Jonathan. Just looking at their schedule, I mean, would it surprise you if Tennessee went to a bowl?
Well, I look at Tennessee's schedule, and until November, I only see 3 winnable games, with being Austin Peay, Austin Peay, Western Kentucky and South Alabama. At Oregon, at Florida, at Alabama. I mean, I know they tend to try, you know, play Alabama as tough as they can, but I don't know about this year. You know, Georgia, South Carolina. I think it's that last four games at Missouri, home against Auburn, home against Vanderbilt, at Kentucky. I think looking at Tennessee, I think, you know, they're somewhere between 4 and 7 wins, and I'm not going to go any higher than 7. I would love to see Tennessee in a bowl game. I love Neyland Stadium.
Uh-huh.
I really do. I mean, I like the orange and white. Don't ask me why. It's just very simplistic. You know, but it's going to be tough. It's not a reloading year for Tennessee. It's more of a rebuilding year with Tyler Bray and Hunter and Patterson and all them gone. So, you know, high hopes but low expectations.
Well, you have Auburn, Cuervo, is an 8-point underdog to Tennessee in Neyland Stadium. I mean, you have to be pretty – you have to know football very well to put a point spread on a game in mid-November, don't you?
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, I didn't think that they would be out this soon. So, but for them to be an 8-point favorite, that's a roll of the dice, really. I mean, you never know. I mean, injuries could happen, suspensions could happen. As we all know at Tennessee, that's a pretty popular thing. People getting suspended, so. I mean, you just never know. I mean, we could see a whole new quarterback by week 3. We could see a lot of different things happen.
Yeah.
We could see that Auburn happening. So I don't know how they got.
Well,
I'll tell you why
Auburn is an underdog right now, and it's because, I mean, when you don't have a quarterback named and you look at last year's quarterbacks on Auburn's team, you would put them an underdog too. But what they, and we'll talk about Auburn real quick, and we'll move to Florida State and get Jonathan's take on it as well. But when you talk about Auburn right now, you're talking about a team that's going to fly under the radar this year. And it's because when you look at a team that for 4 years in a row have had top 10 recruiting classes year in and year out, and I think the main thing they're missing is a quarterback, and it's going to be answered by Nick Marshall, the JUCO transfer, Cuervo, that comes in. You know, he's a very athletic guy. He went to Georgia. He sat behind Aaron Murray his first year, and he transferred. He got into some trouble and transferred. But tell me, Cuervo, you put a quarterback, Cam Newton type quarterback in that's an athlete into a team with talent with a new coach that knows how to score, Auburn could be a dangerous team this year.
Well, they can. And as long as, you know, they put all those pieces together and they make them fit right and they get where they want to get, then of course. I mean, Auburn is they're an SEC, you know what I mean? So they're always going to be a threat nationally. I mean, the SEC teams, there's always a team every year that just comes out of nowhere. It has themselves a great season. So this year it could be Auburn. It could be any of those teams. So and I'm looking at Auburn's schedule right now, and I think their first 3 games are, you know, pretty reasonable. Washington State, Arkansas State, Mississippi State. I think those are two, you know, at least 2 out of those 3 I think they could possibly win. But then they go to LSU, and that's going to be tough. But I can see Auburn winning at least, you know, 5, maybe 6 games as well. And that's another bowl eligible team right there. So. But, I mean, it just all depends. I think things are, you know, going to be better for Auburn in the future.
See, I think LSU, though, is a team that Auburn plays very well, but they don't play them very well when it's in Baton Rouge. They always play them tough in Auburn. But I think LSU is going to take a step back this year, and I think that's a winnable game. When you look at Auburn's schedule, it all depends. You know, the timing's good. They have a good schedule. They have Alabama at home this year. They have Georgia home this year. And, you know, going to Arkansas, you never know what they're going to have. But I look at that schedule, guys, and 6 or 7 wins, if they don't get at least that, would be a huge disappointment. And I think Auburn needs that momentum in the win column this year just to help recruiting again, because if you look at their recruiting class, they're starting to pick up some big-time commitments, gain a lot of momentum. They're just killing Mobile right now. That's a place Nick Saban has dominated. But it all depends on one thing, Jonathan. the quarterback play for Auburn. If they have a successful year at the quarterback position, I mean, they could have 8 or 9 wins.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I look at Auburn's schedule and, you know, I see a minimum of 5 wins. There's no doubt in my mind they don't win at least 5. You know, Washington State, Arkansas State, Western Carolina, Florida Atlantic, Arkansas or Tennessee, I think they take one of those two. And Mississippi State or Ole Miss, I think they take one of those two. So, I mean, I'm looking at 6 wins. I mean, I'm looking at a floor of 5 and a ceiling of 8. I really am. Because I expect Auburn to be a lot better. I like Gus Malzahn.
I do, too. And I'll tell you why I like him so much, Cuervo, is Gus Malzahn is, I mean, he's a workaholic. I mean, that's not good for his personal life, but it's very good characteristic to have as a coach. Look at Nick Saban. He's a freak when it comes to doing it his way. And Gus Malzahn, he's not a name that people know as a head coach, but he could be that name in a few years. You never know what he can do because he look at the staff he's gathered around him, Cuervo. That's one thing that I think these coaches realize, that Gus Malzahn is a true leader. They come to work for him. Damian Craig, he asked Damian Craig the first time to leave Florida State. He said no. But you know what? He didn't take no for an answer. He came back again and actually got Damian Craig. How big was that for Auburn, Cuervo, to get a big-time recruiter from Florida State?
Well, I think that was, yeah, I mean, I think that was huge. And for those who don't remember, Damian Craig is an Auburn alumni anyway. So I think you know, him coming, he said he came back to Auburn. I want to make sure I heard this correctly.
Yeah, he did. He played quarterback at Auburn, if you remember. He was he lost to Tennessee and Peyton Manning in the SEC championship game, but he went to Florida State and he's been with Jimbo Fisher and he's been dominating recruiting for Florida State, especially in South Alabama and the Mobile area. A lot of these kids love Damian Craig, but he actually made the trip. Now he's working for Auburn and Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, and that's huge because, you know, you can have the best coaching staff, but if you don't bring in the players, you know, the talent, the high talent level players to make this oiled machine work, then what do you really have? You know, so having a good recruiter is, you know, definitely important. And like you said, I mean, bringing a guy in that has dominated the Mobile area, that's huge. You know, that
it is.
We could, you know, it's huge because that takes away obviously from the Crimson Tide. So, you know, it's gonna be interesting how that plays out. You know, we may see the momentum shift over to Auburn's side here in the future.
Yeah, we could. And the thing, like you said, you have to have the talent to win. That is definitely true. But Auburn's problem was they had the staff that could recruit, but they didn't have the staff that could develop those recruits once they came on campus. You can't just get them here and expect to win. You have to develop them in the weight room. You have to develop them, you know, into young men, and that's something that the Auburn coaches just couldn't do. For some reason, they never got a grasp. That 2010 year was, honestly, it was all Cam Newton. And it was the Tommy Tuberville's players underneath that came back, the seniors that, you know, took a beating for a couple of years. So Cam Newton added to that with Nick Fairley, really made Auburn's program appear to be in a good place. But we know as Auburn fans that it wasn't in a good place because the cupboard was empty. But what Gus Malzahn did, guys, was he brought a great coaching staff in. I mean, some young guys, they got an old guy in running the defense that knows the SEC better than anyone. But these guys can develop players. If you go back and look at the history of some of the players they recruited themselves and developed, I'm very impressed with what Auburn could do. They might not do it this year because you have to get everything in place. But I'm telling you guys, in the next between now and 3 years, Auburn's going to be in a conversation of a top 5 team year in and year out. Johnson.
I mean, yeah, I could buy an Auburn. I love Malzahn. I love the way he's recruiting. I love the offense he runs. You know, I'm slowly becoming more and more enamored with Auburn. as a football team, especially with, you know, the conversations you and I have about what's going on. It's just he put together such a good staff. The players are buying in. That's the biggest thing. I mean, that's what you need is for players to buy into your system, and it sounds like they have at Auburn, and they really have. Nick Saban better watch out. I mean, you know, and Nick Saban being 64, doesn't look it, but he's 64. He might want to start thinking retirement if Auburn starts making that strong push again.
Well, the thing that Nick Saban can't stand, and it's spread offenses, Cuervo. He's had trouble in the past with those, and now you have Ole Miss coming in that runs a spread. You have Texas A&M now with – you saw what they did, and you have Auburn now with Gus Malzahn. So I think Nick Saban's days could be numbered unless he makes some adjustments.
Right, and you know, I mean, it's a chess game in reality. Now it's going to be Nick Saban's move to adjust to what the new styles are of college football. I mean, you know, that's what you got to do. It's a chess match. I mean, that's why you see certain teams that continue to progress, and then you have the ones that are not willing to make changes. They're not, you know, they continue to go down, and I think that's what Tennessee's problem was too. Is I think, you know, a lot of people didn't like the firing of Fulmer when he got fired. I think it was like 3 years overdue. That's just my opinion. I think they should have let him go years ago because of the fact, and not that he wasn't a good coach. No, Coach Fulmer was great, but it's just it was kind of a thing where I felt like the program was being held back because of his ways. He wasn't willing to make changes. He wasn't willing to do anything differently with his football team. He was running the same, you know, same style of offense, the same style of defense, and he wasn't staying with today's game, and it cost him. And now you see where the Tennessee program is. They're just now trying to get back on their feet when, you know, Fulmer's been out of the position now for what, 4 or 5 years now. So it's you know, that's how far back, you know, the program was set because of the fact that they weren't willing to make changes to today's game. So it's important.
Well,
I admire the fact
that Tennessee made changes, though, and you see teams like Georgia, and I'm going to use them as a reference. You know, Tommy Tuberville at Auburn, he didn't make the right changes. It backfired. They got rid of him. They brought in Gene Chizik. He won a championship. He showed signs that he was going down. They got rid of him. Tennessee did the same thing. But Georgia, that's a team that it seems like their fans always settle for mediocrity. I mean, these guys every year, Mark Richt, with the talent he has, should win. He should have at least 2 national championships, Jonathan, under his belt. But, I mean, tell us about Georgia. How long are they going to keep Mark Richt if he doesn't win the big game?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that has got to be the most frustrating thing about being a Georgia fan is Mark Richt can't win the big one. I mean, let's face it, by all rights last year, they should, you know, they had a great chance to beat Alabama last year. And Mark Richt didn't know what to do. He fell apart in the coaching matter at the end of the SEC championship game. You know, I don't know how much longer Georgia can. I don't know how much longer the University of Georgia and their fan base, their alumni, I don't know how much longer they can put up with being a bridesmaid. I really don't. It's frustrating. They've been calling for Richt's head for a while. And there are some Georgia fans that sit there and go, look, you know, he's put up great statistics. And there's other ones that go, where are the SEC championships? Where are the title game? Where are the national championship game appearances? Where are the titles? Where's all this? And you sit there and you go, well, and it's like, well, there's no well. All this talent has not shown up at any championships. So, I mean, he's got to get it done this year. He really does need to get it done. Last year was the perfect year for them to get it done. They had everything going right and fell apart. This has got to be the year they get it done, or I think Georgia could make that change. If Georgia doesn't win 10 games this year, I guarantee you Richt is gone.
Yeah, but if you look at the state of a program, guys, and if you're Georgia, you're the main football attraction in the state, and you should be a powerhouse, but yet you lose most of your top recruits. in the state of Georgia to Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Florida, whoever. They come and they pick and choose who they want. And that's one thing, if I was a Georgia fan, that would concern me. If you can't win your own state, how are you going to win a championship, Cuervo? I think you have to be successful. He's going to have to start bringing in the players he wants out of Georgia and quit being so passive and lazy in recruiting, because that's one thing that got Tuffle in trouble. He was lazy on recruiting. He expected players just to come because of the name or the name of the team. But Mark Riggs is going to have to show more hustle, I guess, and start recruiting better, because he's not going to win a championship if he don't.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Brian. If he's just trying to sell the name itself, good luck with that, okay? Because, let's face it, they haven't won a national title since what's his name?
Herschel Walker.
Herschel Walker was the running back. Vince Dooley, Derek's father, was the head coach. That's been 30 years now, guys, since Georgia's won the national championship. 30 years. I mean, like I said, Herschel Walker was a freshman in college. Vince Dooley, Derek's father, was the head coach. So it's been a long time is basically what I'm trying to get at. You cannot sell the name anymore. It's just not going to work. It's only going to work for Alabama and maybe, I would say, LSU if you're lucky. All right. Other than that, you can't just sell the name. You have to sell what you're doing. What are you doing to win a national championship? Who are you bringing in? You know, that's what you got to do. But look, you want to win a championship? You know, we got this guy coming. We got that guy coming. We're doing these things. That's what you got to do. So you're absolutely right. I think the problem is Mark Richt must be selling the name more than what the product itself is. And you know, you can't do that when you've won. You know, you haven't won a title in over 30 years. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, and you lose the number one player in the state. In your state and probably in the country to Ole Miss. You lost a great player to Clemson. I mean, you're losing him left and right. And the problem is these other coaches like Auburn, Alabama, Florida State, Tennessee, whoever, they're coming in and developing relationships with these guys, and they're getting in the door before Mark Richt can decide. If you look at some of the top players in the country from Georgia, Georgia's always the last one to get in, and they think because the kid's a Georgia fan all their life, they're coming. And that does help sometimes. They do get some players like that. But, they just lost Rodney Garner, the best recruiter in the country, to Auburn, their rival. If you're Georgia, how do you let him go, Jonathan? How do you let Rodney Garner go to your rival?
Exactly. And I was going to actually ask you about that, Tarvin, because, he did wind up at Auburn. And you're exactly right. How can you let that happen? How can you – he is your tie into the state for recruiting purposes, and you let him walk and not only just walk and, let's say he goes to, Ole Miss or, somebody like that. Let him go to Auburn? Come on now. That's just bad.
A few weeks before signing day, Jonathan, and Auburn brought in two or three five-stars from the state of Georgia that Georgia was supposed to have, and you let him go right before signing day, and he takes all these guys that he's been building a relationship with for years. I mean, you would think Georgia, if they were in a better state than Auburn was, they would be able to hold on to these coaches, Cuervo. I mean, that's just ridiculous to let your best coach leave to go to your rival right across the state.
That's just a sign of weakness, Brian. That's what it is. You were too weak to hold on to one of your best coaches, and you just let him walk. That's a sign of weakness, and that's a sign of why you haven't won a national championship. In reality,
uh-huh.
You got to be aggressive, man. Especially in the SEC, you got to be aggressive. You got to be tough. You got to be willing to step on people's toes. I'm sorry to say it, but that's the name of the game. Get ahead. And for those that are trying to, you do it the right way, be a Southern gentleman, how many crystal footballs do you have for that? Oh, none? Oh, okay.
You know, Rodney Garner would be different if he was leaving Georgia as a defensive coach to to become the head coach or something at another school, that's different. It'd be like Kirby Smart leaving Alabama as a defensive coordinator to come to be the defensive coordinator at Auburn. That's not going to happen as long as Nick Saban's alive, I promise you. You wouldn't even think about that. But you look at Mark Richt, Cuervo, do you think he's too nice of a guy to be a head coach in the SEC where it's just cutthroat? Because I think that's where they struggle sometimes.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. He's too nice. He's too, southern gentleman, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
That stuff works when you go to meet family and when, you know, you go, you meet your girlfriend's family for the first time. That's when you use that stuff. But when you're talking about your work, your how you make your money, how you provide for your family, man, sometimes you got to step on people's toes, especially in the SEC. That in the Big East, maybe that politeness works because it's the Big East. But this is the SEC. This is the big boys. This is pretty much, you can compare the SEC to the D League and the NBA. This is the step just below the NFL. You gotta step on toes sometimes. And Mark Richt, that's why he hasn't won a title yet, because he's too nice of a guy, in my opinion.
Yeah, if you look at discipline and stuff, you know, like Georgia, they have problems. Auburn had problems when it came to fearing a coach, I believe. You see all of these off-the-field issues constantly with Georgia, because I don't think anybody's scared of Mark Richt. What's he going to do, suspend you for a game? Oh, well, I mean, he doesn't scare you like a Nick Saban does. Most of these players at Alabama know if they screw up, they're probably out, because you know why? There's four players waiting to take that guy's place when he does screw up. And that's why at Alabama, they have a leader. They have a coach that puts fear in these players, and they know if they screw up, they're not going to be playing in the NFL, probably. They're going to be screwed. And I think Mark Richt has yet to master that talent, Jonathan, to put fear in these players.
Yeah, he has yet to instill a fear of God mentality at all at Georgia. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I have buddies who play for the University of Georgia. I do. And that's one thing that, you know, unfortunately I have mentioned. He is just such a nice guy that disappointing him is like disappointing your father, and to the point where he's going to sit there and tell you, I'm disappointed in you. You know, I wish you hadn't done that. But it's not a, oh, well, this is the end of the world kind of thing. They just look at it like, well, you know, sorry, I'll get another crack at it next week. Well, that's not how it's done at when you're, you know, at these winning programs. That's how they do business. You screw up, and that's it. You're done. Get out of here. We don't want to see you ever again.
I get on my nerves some of the Georgia fans that I encounter, you know, getting on Auburn last year for their 3-9 record, making fun of it. But you know what? I would take that national championship in 2010 in 5 3-9 seasons before I would be a 9-win choke artist team and be happy with that, because most Georgia fans are happy with mediocrity. That's just the way it is. The ones I know, it's like the Braves. I mean, these fans, they could care less if they choke in the first round of the playoffs. They'll get them next year. Falcons fans, Hawks fans are all the same, guys. Something in Georgia, I live in Georgia now, but it's just mediocrity is accepted here, Cuervo. I just can't get it.
It's what they're used to, Brian. You know, it's what they're used to. Let me ask you guys a question. How many times have you really seen Mark Richt get pissed off? I'm talking whether it's in a game, whether it's in a press conference, or whether, you know, they're showing, like, you know, behind-the-scenes footage of the Georgia, you know, the during their training camps or during practices. How many times have you really seen Mark Richt get mad? I'm talking like
none.
His face being red. Exactly. None. Ever. Never, ever. But then you see guys like Bill Belichick in the NFL. You see Nick Saban. You see Les Miles. Why do you think those coaches are so successful? Because they have that attitude. They have when they have to flip that switch, that switch comes on, and it's like, okay, we better do what coach says, or hey, let's, you know, in a press conference, let's take what he's saying seriously. Like, people take him seriously. I don't think anybody, including, you know, the guys that Jonathan knows, I don't think anybody really takes him that seriously to the point where they're like, oh, crap, we need to respect him. We need to do exactly what he says, or else, you know, like you guys were saying, there, I think what it is, you know, Mark Richt, he's not selling it to the point where it's where the players need him more than he needs the players. I think it's the other way around. He's making it seem like he needs those players more than those players need him. And I think he's got to change that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I saw Mark Richt mad in 2010 when Auburn was playing him, when Nick Fairley was trying to kill the quarterback of Georgia. I saw him get angry then. And you know what? I like that Mark Richt. But the Mark Richt I didn't like was the one that was trying to play the bad guy role. You can't be a badass if you're really not one. People can pick up on that. You know, and I think he went through that phase where he tried to be the tough guy, and it just didn't work. I saw him the year – you remember the year they beat Florida and he had all those celebration penalties in the end zone?
Mm-hmm.
That was the year he tried to start playing that role. And it's just not his personality. Mark Richt needs to be on the mission field somewhere, or he needs to be coaching a high school football team, developing kids, you know, young kids and helping them be young men. I really think that's a good part. But the SEC, all they care about, do you win football games? That's all they care about, guys. You know as well as I do. If you don't win a national championship or be successful, you're not going to stick around long. The only reason he's stuck around this long is because every time he's about to get canned, he ends up winning 10 games or making the SEC championship. But Cuervo, I don't see him anywhere close to being in the same category as Alabama yet.
No, nowhere close. Until Mark Richt, you know, starts to earn his respect and stop expecting to be given the respect just because you're the head coach at Georgia, it's not going to happen. This is going to be the same old story for the Georgia Bulldogs. And, I mean, I don't know. I think that's what's going to happen. And I'll tell you right now, I could very well see, and this would be a stupid move, but, you know, we were talking about who the head coach was the last time they won a national championship, Vince Dooley. I think if Mark Richt continues to have, you know, doesn't get to that national championship level, we could see his son step in and possibly, I seriously doubt it based on my experience, but come in and try to turn this thing around.
Yeah, that could happen. And, you know, I look at the coaches in the SEC, Jonathan. I see Kevin Sumlin and you got Texas A&M. I see the hunger and determination in his eyes, you know, to win a championship. I think he gets it, what it takes to win a championship. I think, you know, Nick Saban does. I think Will Muschamp knows what it's going to take. But for some reason, when I look at Mark Richt, I just don't see that. And we won't harp on Georgia all day, but we're going to move to Florida State real quick, Jonathan, since that's your team. So tell us about your Florida State Seminoles. What does it look like, you know, this year? How many wins and losses are you looking at for your team? And I guess tell me the amount that would be just a total disappointment for you if they lost.
Well, I look at Florida State. I look at the schedule. And I'm going to be dead honest with you guys. If we don't win 10 games, I'm going to go back to calling for Jimbo's head. We are set up this year with our schedule where we need to dominate. I am sick and tired of just what comes off as mediocrity. Really, I mean, we have so much talent. Every year it's, well, Florida State has this high recruiting class. Florida State has this kid come in, this kid and that. And I watched Jameis Winston that spring game, and my gosh, let me tell you guys, Jameis Winston looks phenomenal. That is a kid that make sure y'all watch, because we haven't had a Heisman Trophy winner since Charlie Ward. Jameis Winston may be our next one. Well, my bad, Chris Winkie won it for us. Jameis Winston may be our next Heisman Trophy winner. That kid is good. He throws lasers. This should be a great football team, but at the same time, it's Florida State, and I know what everybody's going to say. Well, every year it's Florida State's year, and you're right, it is every year for multiple years now. It has been our year to shine, our year to do this, our year to do that. This is a make or break year. It's win or go home for Jimbo. I don't accept anything less than 10 wins. And, my gosh, we need to beat Florida. I do not want to lose to Florida again. And all hell will break loose if we lose to Miami.
Yeah, you're looking at a Clemson team you have on the road that, you know, that's a tough road game this year. And tell us about that Clemson Rock, Jonathan, that got destroyed. You think that's going to be any motivation for them to play better this year?
You know, I've watched the Clemson Rock thing, and I've dealt with some of these fans of Clemson, if you want to call them that. And it's been very, very, very interesting how that whole situation's gone on. I mean, from what I heard, the state is actually investigating this as a huge criminal charge. You know, I think it's going to give them more motivation against South Carolina than it is against us or anybody else. I'm still not sold on Clemson. I'm really not. I still look at that defense and have questions that need to be answered somehow or another. And, you know, Clemson's supposed to be the it team this year. Clemson's supposed to be the it team last year. We saw that worked out when we took care of business in Tallahassee. Clemson's favored to beat us in everybody I've seen. They have Clemson beating Florida State. They forget. I mean, I understand we have a freshman quarterback going to that game, and we have a miserable time in Death Valley. And when I saw that game and I saw that it was, you know, sandwiched in between some cupcakes, essentially, for Clemson, and wasn't right after Georgia, I was disappointed. But we have two bye weeks. We have at Pittsburgh, who is rebuilding. We have Bethune-Cookman, home against Nevada, home against Bethune-Cookman. We're at Boston College and home against Maryland. Before, you know, we have 7 weeks of regular season, 5 games to get ready for Clemson. If we come out and throw an egg in that game, that'll be the most disappointing loss in Florida State history in the past. You know, I just over exaggerate it. It'll be an extremely disappointing loss, but we need to beat Florida. We lose to Clemson, I'm not going to cry because it's Death Valley, I have a hard time. We lose to Florida, and I'm gonna throw a fit. We lose to Miami. Oh, God, no, don't make us lose to Miami. You know, I mean, Matthew Thomas has said he's going to honor his commitment. Thank you. I mean, it's about time these kids actually have some accountability. It's a reloading year. It really is. We're not rebuilding. We kept a great core of our team. We only lost one root. We lost two starters. We lost a right tackle that was really only there for a year. We lost a 4-year quarterback, but we're replacing him with somebody who's better. And on defense, we're replacing defensive ends with guys who are the top defensive ends in their classes. We have the talent. It's got to show up on the field. It really does. And we can say that about a lot of teams, though. Just like Georgia, we were just talking about it.
Well, I'll tell you, the good thing for Florida State is Clemson's going to beat Georgia that first game. And then Georgia's going to lose to South Carolina. They're going to be in that same boat they're always in. But I think Clemson's going to be a little more cockier than normal. I mean, Taj Boyd is a good quarterback. Don't get me wrong. I expect Clemson to do great things this year. But great is 10-2 in my eyes with Clemson. They're going to lose games. They're going to lose to Florida State. I mean, if you think Taj Boyd is good, just wait till you see this Winston kid, Cuervo. I mean, this guy has all the capabilities of being a Heisman Trophy winner, just like Jonathan says. So Cuervo, in the ACC, are you looking at a team right now that could possibly win that national championship?
We might have lost Cuervo.
We might have lost. He might be on mute right now, but I'm outside. I'm about to be back in so I can see the studio. He might have been trying to call back in. So if you're listening, Cuervo, and you're trying to get back in, you'll be in about 3 minutes. But, Jonathan, take us through what you think the recruiting is with Florida State right now, like going into the 2014 season. What is Jimbo Fisher trying to accomplish?
Well, we are putting together a pretty good recruiting class. I will say that right now. Our recruiting class is actually looking pretty good for 2014. We're doing a good job of getting it done. We got how many 4-stars committed now? We got 8 4-stars and 3 3-stars. We got our top 3 recruits right now are all linebackers. 2 outsides, 1 inside, and that's huge because that, you know, a lot of people are like, well, that could be a weakness. We got Kevin Dobb, the number 2 middle linebacker. We got Jacob Pugh and Delvin Purefoy, the number 5 and 6 outside linebackers. And that's big for us. It really is. We got a couple receivers coming in, one from Miami Northwestern. We got one from Mississippi. And we got a quarterback, the number 9 quarterback is a pocket passer. not mobile, from Pittsburgh coming in. I'm looking at recruiting class. We're doing a good job of filling what should be needs. And you know, with the wide receiver, defensive tackles, we got a 4-star and a 3-star D tackle. We got three, you know, tough-looking linebackers coming in with some good size. The recruiting is shaping up really well right now. Florida State's doing such a good job recruiting, we're actually already touching the 2015 and 2016 classes. We just had the Jimbo Fisher recruitment camp where, you know, you had all these kids come in for 2014, 15, and 16 recruiting, and there were some pretty high-ranked prospects in 2015 already coming in. In 2014, we had a lot of kids come in. I'm really impressed with what's going on, but I've been impressed with Florida State's recruiting classes for a couple of years now and still don't have enough championship ring to look at. I still haven't seen a crystal ball. I do not want to be Georgia, the ACC, gosh darn it.
Cuervo, looking at the ACC, tell me a team that you're looking at that could possibly, you know, make a push for that national championship.
Honestly, outside of Florida State, I really don't see anybody, really. I mean, you can talk all you want about Clemson, but just like Jonathan said, I mean, their defense is suspect. You can talk about, Miami. Miami's not what they used to be. Virginia Tech's not what they used to be. NC State has never really been relevant as far as on a national level. So if it's not Florida State, guys, I don't think anybody out of the ACC can even sniff the national championship, in my opinion.
That's a good point, and I'm with you, Cuervo. I think Clemson, though, if Clemson plays up to caliber, I believe that they have a chance, Jonathan, to get there. I mean, looking if they can beat Florida State and if they can beat Georgia, which I think they can, I mean, I think they could be in the conversation because you remember a couple years ago they had that real good first three quarters of the season and then it all fell apart. So we'll see how good of a coach Dabo is. I hate Dabo Sweeney, but we'll see how good of a coach he is. Let's stay in college football. Let's stay in college football real quick. And look, every day you turn it on, Johnny Manziel's in the news. And Cuervo, I'm going to come to you on this one first. Johnny Manziel sent a tweet out really saying that he hated Texas A&M and he can't wait to leave there. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know what to make of that, guys. I mean, I heard something about it this morning. I don't know the full story. I think it's just, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think he just, I mean, let's remember. This guy's, he's a freshman last year. So he's, what, 18 years old probably? Maybe 19
he's 20.
Years old? He's 20 years old. But, I mean, I just think the attention that he's getting is overwhelming him, and I think that's where his unhappiness, quote unquote, comes from. But I'll tell you what, hey, that ain't gonna make the fans happy. It don't matter how happy or how sad he is or whatever. For him to say something like that, that's not gonna be a very good beginning of the season for him. So. And I don't think any apologies will fix it.
No, and also, Jonathan, looking at this statement, what does this do to some future recruits that are now committed to Texas A&M or maybe looking at Texas A&M? Are they scratching their head now wondering what's going on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this Johnny Manziel has no idea what he just did. The recruiting backlash, because now kids are sitting there going, wait, so that means Manziel's going to leave after this year because he's going to be a redshirt sophomore. That's 3 years out. He can declare for the draft after this year. So does that mean that Johnny Manziel himself, you know, Mr. Johnny Football, who put so much pressure on himself after he won the Heisman by going out and running around like a damn fool? Does this mean that the recruits are going to look at it and go, wait, if Johnny, Mr. Heisman Football Manziel doesn't like me in Texas A&M, do I want to go? Do I want to go to College Station? I think Manziel's problems stem from himself. And let's face it, if you look back and you read the bios on him and you watch the ESPN stuff on him, he was spoiled growing up. He was a spoiled kid. You know, you can't say he wasn't heavily recruited because he decommitted from Oregon to go to A&M. You know, and A&M's his backdoor home. I mean, why would you be so why would you go from being so enamored in him to not liking it anymore? I mean, what is the underlying issue going on here with Manziel? And I think Kevin Sumlin is going to need to reel this in as quickly as possible. Someone needs to bring Manziel back down to earth because he thinks he's a demigod, and he just needs to realize he's just another football player bringing in money to the university, NCAA. You know, he's there for a free ride, get your education, get out. The fact that he's not even taking classes on campus is problematic enough to bother most people.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest there.
Cuervo, looking at it, you know, when you delete that tweet, it's almost worse than just leaving it out there because you're showing that you said something you shouldn't have said. But he also comes back and says you have to walk a mile in his shoes, walk a day in his shoes to see what he's coming from. I mean, is this guy so naive to sit there and think people's going to feel sorry for him?
Obviously, to make a comment like that, you got to walk a mile. Dude, what is so horrible about your life? Oh, my God, I won the Heisman Trophy. I have people that are giving me attention and, you know, all the other perks that come with being, you know, one of the top football players in college football last year. And your life is that bad and you want people to walk a mile in your shoes? I'll stand in line. You know,
yeah, Cuervo, he was a three-star. Not even really a starter when the season was coming into last year. Now he won a Heisman Trophy, and now he's punched his ticket into the NFL. I mean, very quick. And I'm just not feeling sorry for the kid. Sure, it's a little tougher being in the spotlight and everything now, but, hey, you did it to yourself. Deal with it. I'm not feeling sorry for the kid one bit that now is worth millions of dollars with his policy, and now when he goes to the NFL, Johnny.
Yeah, no, I don't feel sorry for Johnny Manziel at all. You know, he could have been one of the kids like me and many others who had injuries shorten their high school careers. But he got lucky. He was blessed with not only the talent he has, the luck he has to avoid serious injuries. He needs to realize how blessed he is and accept that and play. No more talk. You're not in the NFL. You can't be Terrell Owens yet, son. You haven't proven yourself on the big stage. There are a lot of boys just like you in college who are studs and start to be duds in the NFL. I don't want to listen to you whine and cry right now when you haven't even gone through a training camp yet.
Hey, guys, I'm getting some static in the background from one of y'all's phones. It could be mine, and I'm about to check mine. Will y'all check your phone just to make sure?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. I'm gonna see the studio and see if I can check it out. I'm about to change my headset out just to see if that helps. But Cuervo, Johnny Manziel is
gone.
About to. Static's gone now.
Yeah.
Okay, Cuervo. Johnny Manziel's about to find out. I think he's still in the pressure of now the expectations. Everybody's expecting another Heisman. And the pressure of knowing you're going to have to play a Nick Saban is not going to be easy, Cuervo. There has to be a lot of pressure.
For sure, and that's why he's going to fall right on his face, and Alabama is going to absolutely murder A&M next year. I mean, they are going to murder them. It's not even going to be funny. And then all the talk about how great this kid is and how he's going to be the next – God, you know, Joe Montana, since some people want to make him such a great person, great player, all that stuff's going to be gone. You know, he's going to be another Tim Tebow where he has a great college career and it in no way whatsoever translates into the NFL. And there's going to be a team out there, just like with Tebow, that is going to draft him in the first, maybe even the second round, and they're going to be like, damn. 5 years later, I wish I would have never have done that. And that's going to be the end of Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, he's just very lucky and blessed. And you look at some kids and you wonder how they got to where they are. I mean, I don't think, looking at him, he's a hard worker. I think Jonathan nailed it. I think he's a spoiled kid that probably had the best of everything in his life, the best trainers, the best coaches and things. And he's a good football player, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's not. But to go from being a Heisman Trophy winner or from a nobody, really, to a Heisman Trophy winner, I don't know. I mean, it's just a lot of pressure for him. And now with being the most sought-after person in the world, it seems like. He's another Tim Tebow. He's probably going to be more popular than Tim Tebow. But the difference is he's going pro after next year. But Cuervo, do you think it would be smart for him to play two more years in college and develop more than to just jump into the NFL after next year?
Yes. Of course I think it's better. And not just because I like college football and I want to see, you know, I want to have a reason to watch it. But I just, like you said, I mean, develop. Right now, he is not ready for the NFL.
No.
Even if we're talking about, even after next year, whatever he learns, you know, from in the game next year, it's still not going to be enough. It's not. So I think he needs to stay at least until, you know, his junior year to try and develop more of a pocket passing type style, because right now he doesn't have that. And correct me if I'm wrong, guys, from what I've seen, from what I saw when I watched him play, I'm not impressed with his arm. I don't think his arm is that great. I mean, am I wrong about that? Does he have a cannon for an arm?
No.
Or does he have an okay of
no.
an arm?
Okay, and he's a system quarterback. So Jonathan, let's fast forward 5 years from today, and we're going to – is A.J. McCarron and Johnny Manziel going to be the same caliber quarterbacks as an Andrew Luck and an RG3?
That is fantastic. No. Hell no. AJ McCarron, come on, don't even bring that garbage to my kitchen. We already discussed AJ McCarron, the next Ryan Leaf. Don't even go there. Johnny Manziel, you know, Johnny Manziel reminds me more of Bruce Gronkowski from Toledo, Mr. Sixth Round Pick. And I love Brucey when he was in Tampa. He did a fantastic job for the Bucs during an awful 2006 year. But Manziel ain't it.
I'm talking about the two most talked about quarterbacks that are treated as gods right now. That's not rock star status, but honestly, I don't see either one of them even scratching the surface of an RG3. And look, I underrated RG3. He's a lot better of an athlete than I thought. Like, he's a good quarterback. He's very smart. Look at Andrew Luck. I know people are putting RG3 ahead of Andrew Luck right now, but come on, Andrew Luck is the cream of the crop. But these guys never got the kind of exposure Cuervo is Manziel and McCarron is getting right now, and I think they're just head and shoulders above the two.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Manziel, come on, guys. I mean, why even put him in the same conversation? It's not even – that's disrespect to Andrew Luck, for goodness sake. That's disrespect. That's a slap in the face. You can't – I don't know. I just don't think it's anywhere close. I mean – we can even throw Russell Wilson in this conversation just for fun.
Yeah, I was about to.
Yeah. I beat you to it.
I'll compare Manziel to him.
Right, but I mean, even then, I think, you know what? When you really think about it, though, guys, their stories are kind of similar, because if you remember, Russell Wilson was recruited by NC State originally. He moves over to Wisconsin, and that's where he made his name. So,
Russell, you know, the amazing thing about Russell Wilson was that he was – I don't like how, you know, he spent those 3 years at NC State, got his degree early, and said, well, I'm going to go play baseball, because he's a first-round pick for the Rockies as a shortstop. That's actually a pretty good baseball player. But he told NC State, I'm going to go play baseball, and then slides over to Wisconsin. NC State's sitting there going, wait, I thought you were going to play ball.
You can't blame him. You can't blame him, Jonathan. He wanted to win. He wanted a chance to at least win a game. He was playing for that crappy program.
It was backhanded. It's the same thing Daniel Bryan's doing right now. He was at Maryland. He went to Wisconsin. Daniel Bryan just transferred from Wisconsin to who knows where for now. You know, I hate the trend that it's setting. You realize 65 quarterbacks have transferred this summer? 65.
Wow.
This is not free agency. This is not the NFL, guys. This is college football. You signed a 4-year contract. Do none of these guys believe in competition anymore? Does nobody
exactly.
want to
compete? That's what I was about to bring up, honestly, believe it or not. When you said that, is these quarterbacks now, at the first sign of competition, okay, I didn't win the job, so I'm going here. Okay, I couldn't win it there, so I'm going here. Is that the kids of America today, Cuervo, where, I mean, they don't fight for anything and they don't go through any adversity and try to rise to the occasion?
Whoa.
Yep.
Whoa.
That's exactly
Whoa.
What it is. And this is I'm not saying anything about you, Jonathan. You're
this
is not aimed towards you at all. But I'm going to tell you, in today's youth, so to speak, I like to consider myself still kind of young too, but I'm talking, guys that are, just finishing high school, going into college. I don't know how many years out of high school you are, Jonathan, but
one.
This don't apply.
I'm 19.
To you're 19, but you get it. You get it, guys. There's some guys your age that don't get it. Some of them are just plain lazy. They want everything handed to them. They expect people to, give them, tell them that they're great and expect to win and things like that. Man, you got to work for that stuff. That stuff's not going to come to you. You got to go out there and you got to get it. And this is the problem. You see it on TV all the time, and they're like, well, if he can do it, then I can do it too. Well, LeBron James moved teams. Why can't I do it? Well, I mean, so-and-so, that's what they're seeing in today's athletes is, well, this guy can move over and, look at how easy it is to win. They don't want to work for it. And that's what makes
sports. Tell you what the problem is, Cuervo. It's Father's Day right now. And, when I was a kid, you even looked at your dad wrong. You were getting your teeth knocked out. It was not even a question of what's going to happen. And you do something stupid in a ball game, you act like a fool, you're going to get hell when you come home. Nowadays, I officiate sports, Cuervo, a lot, and I see these kids, these 13, 14, 15-year-old kids, talking to their parents like they're morons and disrespecting them, and it's allowed. Do you know what would happen if I said something to my dad smart in front of someone? Oh, my God, I wouldn't be here today. And that's the problem. They don't have any role models in the house. They don't have any respect. So once they go on to college and in competition, it's not high school anymore. This is college, the best of the best. You can't win. You don't know what else to do, so you quit. You go somewhere else and you try to do it. And I think that's what we're trying to say, Jonathan. Nothing directed at you, but the majority of the kids of this nation, it's not like it used to be where parents really ruled the roost at home. Now the kids have all the power. If you hit your kids, you'll probably go to jail these days, Cuervo. And I think that's the biggest problem in America these days in sports is we have a bunch of spoiled brats.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I can jump in here, since I am 19, I've grown up in this generation.
Spoiled
brat. I understand this I know this generation. I also remember that when we were at a restaurant, by the age of three, I learned if my dad said, you want to go to the bathroom, I was doing something wrong. I mean, my daddy did not spare the rod. Trust me on that. I mean, my dad is still disciplining me at an early age, and it's something that I did not see a lot of. I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't. If I messed up in school, there was not allowed. There was nothing. No, if I messed up in school, people in the office would be afraid for me. I mean, my dad made sure I learned to respect my elders, made sure that I understood competition. I that I had to fight for what is mine. If I wanted to make it in the world, I had to earn it. And a lot of kids these days, they don't understand the whole earning process of it. They really don't. I mean, and you see it in the school system. You really do. In public school system, and I'm a product of it. And I'm going to say I am proud I went to a public school because I met some great people, met a lot of not so great people. But in the public schools, they pass you along. They just keep moving you along. If you fail, they will keep pushing you and pushing you. At the age of 16, if you cannot get through middle school, they just say, forget it, you're going to high school. No, that's not how it's supposed to work. If you can't do something, you have to keep trying until you succeed at it. Just like you're not allowed to cut anybody from a high school roster. For football, if 200 kids try out, you're supposed to have all 200 kids make the team. No.
Uh-huh.
Let's cut that number down, child. Let's make an actual competition. I know a lot of kids who haven't had to work a day in their life. And it's the most frustrating thing to see, because I have worked my tail off to get where I am, and I can tell you right now that there are times where I didn't work hard, and boy, has it bit me. It has bit me hard.
Yeah.
It's just so frustrating for me as a 19-year-old to sit back and look at my generation and hear everybody talk smack about it and realize, you know, this was kind of fostered, because the generation before us, the generation of athletes before us, the Revises, are the kind who have now created this new momentum of we're not playing our contracts anymore, extend us now. That's what we've learned from. We've learned from the Terrell Owens and the Chad Johnsons, the Daryl Revises, the LeBron James, Dwight Howard. That's who we've learned from. And that's a huge problem, is that there are no good public figures anymore. There's no role models outside the house to look up to anymore that are positive. That's where it started to split.
That's a very good point, Cuervo. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know what? And that's why I pray to God that this whole trade talk between the Clippers and the Boston Celtics, I hope it doesn't happen, because then that's just another example of people jumping ship to, you know, take the easy way out to win a championship. And this is coming from older guys. That's the funny part about that.
The Clippers rejected that trade last night.
Well, and that's good, and I applaud the Clippers for that. I'm glad they did, because that's just another example of, all you got to do is just find the easy way out, and that's the problem. That's the problem with today. And I made a comment in the chat room where Jonathan said where people feel like they deserve a shot at getting on a team and stuff like that. When I hear that word, and this isn't, you know, any type of, you know, backlash towards you, John, it's just the word. Using that word deserve, you'll never hear me use that word, because nothing in life, nobody ever deserves anything in life, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You got to go out there and you got to earn it. Just like, where we are at in our lives right now, we have all earned that, you know, where we are. We've worked for it. We've done what we had to do. We've earned it. So that's why we have what we have. And
I'm sorry, go ahead, buddy. I didn't mean to cut you off. I cut out on you.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
No, it's like when I was in school, when I was in school, Cuervo, I got cut from some teams, you know, and you know, it made me work harder to come back the next year. And you didn't make the team just because you showed up to practice or tryouts. You had to go through a grueling tryout, and sometimes you made the team, sometimes you didn't. And if you had a day off or you had a bad day, you could be cut. Kids don't have that pressure anymore, Cuervo, because, I mean, it's given to them. Like Jonathan said, everybody's on the team now. If you try out, you get it. But, I mean, do you really learn life lessons from always getting what you want?
God,
no. Nope, not at all. And I'll tell you what, Jonathan said the word, and this is what it all boils down to. Okay, we can talk about all we want, but what it comes down to is one thing, guys. And Jonathan said the word about what his father did to him at an early age. Discipline. There is no discipline in today's, you know, generation. And that's why I said Jonathan is not included in this conversation of people that, you know, that are like that, because he has that discipline. A lot of these guys today, they don't. They don't have it. They don't know what it's like to be told no. And once they hear the word no, well, what do you mean no? You owe me. You owe me. I tried out for the team, so you owe me this and you owe me that. Trust me. Guys, for those who don't know, and I don't mean this to make it the show about me right now, but just real quick, as you guys know, I'm active duty in the military. My job is to recruit guys Jonathan's age, 17, 18, 19 years old, to, you know, for them to see if the military is an option for them, or if they want to join, whatever the case may be. And you mentioned it, guys. The way these kids today talk to their parents, talk to their families, talk to even us. At least they try to talk to us in a certain way, and we tell them how it is. But there's no respect level. There's no respect and there's no discipline. And that's where people mess up. But then you have coaches that are the tough ones, unlike Mark Richt, and that's why they are successful. And that's what I think is being lacked is discipline and respect. If you don't have those two things, you're not going anywhere in life. You know, kids that think people are just going to come knock on their door and say, hey, here's a scholarship to go to college, or, you know, here's an opportunity to go, you know, play basketball or go play football for such and such school, or, you know, what? That's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, I think that's where the disconnect is guys nowadays, kids nowadays, they think people owe them and that they are expected things and you're just going to hand it to them because, well, you know, I'm the future of society. Well, yeah, at least you're supposed to be, but you got to go out mm-hmm. there and you got to work for it. You got to earn it.
Yeah. I saw a picture of Jonathan's dad, so I know why he was raised up, right? He didn't want to screw up too much. So that's one thing. But, you know, Chris Paul, though, is an example to me. I mean, a guy that can't get along with some guys on their team and getting his way, getting people cussing the team or traded off. I mean, whatever happened to working through issues with people? Okay, you don't like someone, you don't get along with them. Well, figure it out. You have to be a team. You have to join together and become one. You might not want to go eat a burger with him after the game, but you have to coexist and be able to be mature enough to handle it in a way where you can still win games. And Chris Paul is a big punk, Cuervo, and that's the way I look at him right now with Chris Paul and the way he doesn't want to work hard or coexist with people. I think he feels a little threatened, honestly.
Well, to me, that's lack of leadership, too. I mean, for people that look at Chris Paul as a leader, well, I think this proves that you're kind of mistaken. In no way is this showing leadership, because if you're just going to say, well, I don't like you, so I'm just not going to deal with you now, that's wrong approach. Because no matter where you go in life, you're gonna run into somebody that you're not going to get along with. You got to learn how to work through that, man. And mm-hmm. and he's another example, too, of somebody that, you know, wants to find the easy way out, so to speak. All right, all these talks about him and Dwight Howard talking about teaming up and this and that, it's ridiculous. I mean, he's just another example of the list of guys that Jonathan mentioned earlier that are just jumping ship to try and get the easy way out. And Chris Paul is no different from those other guys.
No, that's exactly Jonathan.
Oh, yeah, I keep hearing all these Chris Paul talks with the trade. Well, not even with the trade, with free agency. And I keep hearing Dwight Howard being brought up. And I make no bones about it. I'm born and raised. I'm a Florida boy. I'm an Orlando Magic fan because that's the closest franchise to my hometown. I grew up a Magic fan. And when Dwight Howard was here, you couldn't have found an athlete that was more loved and respected anywhere else. And I'm being dead honest with that. We love Dwight. What he did to us was the ultimate move of a backstabber. And to hear that, you know, now he wants to team up with Chris Paul, I'm going to tell you right now, Dwight Howard doesn't want to be the man in a big market. It's a fact. I don't care what he tries to say. I don't care what persona he puts on like he did for us. He doesn't want to be the man. He is terrified of the responsibilities of actually owning up to his decisions. And Chris Paul is now just proving that. I mean, he was able to buy his way out of New Orleans by crying enough. When does it stop? That is my question. When do all these stupid shenanigans cease? Because it's getting too far. It's gone way too far.
It's not going to stop. It's just going to get worse, and it's just because of the society we live in. And you talked about it earlier. You made a good point about the role models that y'all have today and the kids of today we're looking at. Cuervo, I know we're close to the same age, I believe. And when I was a kid, you know, I had Pete Rose, Mike Schmidt, Michael Jordan, Lenny Dykstra's of the world, just tough grit people. You know, you look at Joe Montana, Dan Marino, the real player, I mean, real role models that you could look up to. When you watch a baseball game and you go out and play it, you want to be just like that person. Well, today, these kids, all they have is a bunch of guys arguing and bitching at umpires, showing people up, disrespecting their own teammates, their coaches. I don't see it getting any better, Cuervo. I just think we're on a slippery slope now, and I just don't see any way back up.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and that's why I hate when I see things like what happened the other night at Dodger Stadium between the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. Guys, that's, you know, for those that are listening that are, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, and you know, we have somebody on right now that'll tell you the same thing. That is 19 years old. You don't – that's not what baseball is about. It's not about, oh, well, let's see who can – you know, how many players can hit who and who got the better bean and, you know, who hit who in the face and which one looked better. That's not what baseball is about. So for those that think that, you're sadly mistaken. What happened the other night is embarrassing to baseball. Bud Selig should be embarrassed because that's you're trying to bring the sport back to what, you know, to what it used to be. And on top of that, you've got all these, you know, these scandals going on with the steroids. You got Ryan Braun and all this other stuff going on. It's embarrassing. You don't have guys like Pete Rose anymore, like you mentioned. Ryan Sandberg growing up in Chicago. That was the guy that people looked at, you know, that people went to go watch. My personal favorite Cub was Mark Grace. It was the whole, you know, the whole lefty thing because I'm a left-handed guy. So I liked Mark Grace as a kid growing up. And he was another guy that, you know, I don't like to use the term he played the game the right way. But what I mean by that is he played, he just went out there and he did his thing at first base every game. You can hear him yelling at umpires and stuff like that. Now, you have your occasional George Brett moments, and I know you know what I'm talking about, guys. But it was an everyday thing. Now you're seeing brawls in baseball, what, once every, I'd say, 1 to 2 weeks now? And maybe not that often. Maybe I'm exaggerating. But it happens way too much. And like you said, Brian, you know, guys just whining and bitching and moaning about they didn't get the strike call or they didn't get that foul or why are you calling me for holding or whatever. You get paid millions of dollars. So what? You got a holding call. Big deal. Move on from it and play the next play. That's all you got to do. But they want to keep going back to that one play.
It's selfishness. Think about it. Everything you talked about just now and we've talked about on this show is selfishness. Everybody thinks the game's just about them. You charge a mound because they hit you. You're so important that they came against you, so now you're going to go charge a mound. Or that umpire's personally against you to call a strike. Who are you to call a strike on me? I think it's the selfishness. And there's no true teams anymore because with a team, you can't just have everybody being selfish. You have to play together. And the Spurs are a perfect example of that to me, of a team that has no egos, really, and they just come together and play, unlike the Miami Heat. So if the teams of today could be more like the Spurs, Cuervo, I think it would be a lot better. But the selfishness now in the game of every sport is just sickening. It's hard to watch. I watch college football because I love it. But once you get past that, all these other sports, it's just absurd. And they're trying to change college football to be like that now.
Yeah, and people wonder why nobody likes the San Antonio Spurs because they don't have that guy that has that overpowering ego like you do in Miami with LeBron and Dwayne Wade or like you do in Oklahoma City with Kevin. But see, well, Kevin Durant, I don't think he's not a egotistical person. He's not like a guy that tries to show off. He's just damn good. And, you know, he goes out there and he shows it every night. So that's a guy that I appreciate watching. Some of these other guys, though, not so much. But I'm sorry, Jonathan, I didn't mean to cut you off. I know you were about to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think I was blessed to be born in the Tampa area because, you know, nobody talks about us when it comes to sports. Let's be honest. When the Bucks won the Super Bowl, it was the first time that anybody even gave us credit. The Lightning won the Stanley Cup, and it was like, oh, well, what are they even doing then? When the Rays showed up in the World Series, everybody's sitting there going, whoa, 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 who are these guys? My role models growing up were Mike Allstott, Derek Brooks, John Lynch, Rondae Barber, Aubrey Huff, who I've distanced myself from because he started bad-mouthing Tampa. But Marty St. Louis, Vinny the Cavalier, Carl Crawford, who, you know, he didn't leave the Rays. The Rays left him. You know, I think the only poor role models I ever had were Warren Sapp and Barry Bonds. And I'll still defend Barry Bonds to this day. Ken Griffey Jr. is another role model of mine. You know, I got lucky because I got to pick these guys. And these guys were down to earth. I've met Mike Alstott. I've met Derek. I've met Rondé. They're all really nice guys. You know, and that's where, you know, that's where the luck of the draw is where you're born. Like, if you're born in Pittsburgh, if you were born and got to avoid Joey Porter, I mean, you have some decent role models in, like, Hines Ward, you know, and Brett Keisel and guys like that. You know, I mean, it's about, you know, where the team's at, like New England with Bill Belichick. Come on. Who's going to be a poor role model in Boston for you? David Ortiz, Dustin Pedroia, Jacoby Ellsbury, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just certain environments. And I think I really did draw the lottery. I grew up at the age of 5 playing poker with guys who were 26. You know, I will always say that my daddy raised me right. You know, I will say I do consider myself an old soul. I used to watch ESPN Classic games before I watched a live football game back in the day. I'm not kidding. I asked my grandfather. It was kind of scary waking up at 5 a.m. finding me watching Auburn and USC in 1980. You know, I mean, it's just kids today, they look for the flash and the substance and the swag, which, oh, don't even get me started on swag. You know, it's...
greatest whatever.
We need an overhaul. We really do. Because when you transition from Michael and Jeff Kobe, and let's face it, people don't like Kobe. People really don't like Kobe. I'm a Kobe fan. Kobe backs up whatever talk he puts out there with his play. And you have LeBron, and Kobe doesn't flop. I mean, he'll embellish a foul, but he doesn't flop. You have the Miami Heat, who are the team of the nation right now. So many Heat fans popped out the woodwork. You have Dwayne Wade, who has now gone from where I remember him as Flash and being Shaq's sidekick to being LeBron's sidekick and playing a little dirty now and then and crying and whining about fouls. You have LeBron who flops. I mean, when are we going to start holding these athletes actually accountable for the poor examples that they are setting for the youth, my generation? And because, you know, whatever the generation after me, there are going to be some screwed up kids, guys. I am more scared of the next generation than mine. My generation is going to screw some things up. The generation after me can screw it all over. It's going to be bad, guys. I mean, we're really going to need good parents. We're going to need good role models. We're going to need the league to step up and go, Alex Rodriguez, we're tired of you, you know, getting in trouble for, you know, performance-enhancing drugs, and we're tired of you sitting there before every game throwing baseballs in the stands. You're on the bench, and you're trying to pick up girls. No more. Do it again. We're kicking you out. You know, if you're going to run your mouth, LeBron, back it up. I don't want to hear you crying. You're the best player in the league. You are dominant. You are you are the talent that everybody wishes they could have. He worked hard to get there, guys. And let's face it, LeBron James worked extremely hard to get where he was. He grew up with his best friend's family, military, you know, whose father was in the military, strict discipline. That's when LeBron became what he was, what he is. And LeBron's changing that. For what? He's going to make the money no matter how he acts. Why do these guys feel the need to be in the news? I don't want to hear about your sex life. Keep it to yourself, Jason Collins. I don't care who you're sleeping with. Yeah, I mean, this has become ridiculous. Johnny Manziel, you don't like where you're at? Suck it up. Matt Millen was on College Football Live and said, I didn't want to be at Penn State. I wanted to go to Colorado. My parents said, you're going to Penn State. Guess what? I went with a smile on my face, starred my 4 years, went to the pros, and never complained. I don't want to hear any of you guys complaining.
Yeah,
you know,
I
don't have this
any
kind
of any kind of controversy that goes on now. It's just these kids can't handle it. They're not meant to be, and we don't want to beat a dead horse or anything, but the bottom line is, parents out there, today's Father's Day, so if you have a kid out there, you need to start paying attention to who they're looking at, who they're looking up to, who they're emulating, who they're modeling themselves after, because look, Cuervo Johnson's right. You look on TV, that's all you see.
is a bunch of divas and floppers out there trying to show you the way to cheat to get what you want, in a way to not play the game the way it's meant to be. And it all starts at home. So when I have a kid one day, I'm going to do my best to be the dad and the role model that they need to be able to survive, because Jonathan's right, this next generation coming through could kill America, Cuervo, and it's kind of scary.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely is scary. And I mean, the bleeding started, but we have the opportunity to stop it. And it's going to take a lot of old school tactics, but I think it's possible. It's just got to go out there.
Made a good point about, well, I don't care who you sleep with. I don't care where you like to eat. I don't care what you do in the off season. Just all I care about and want to hear about is what you do on the field, what you do on the court. Nobody else cares about if you're gay, if you're not gay, if you're a vegetarian, if you like to eat 10 steaks a day. I don't give a crap. But the bottom line is, all I care about is how you perform on the field and how you are a role model. Even though if you're the worst person in the world, when you're on that field, you're a role model. You play like it. You play like people are trying to be you. So you be the best you can be that 3 hours you're on that field every day. I mean, it's not too much to ask. But Jonathan hit it right on the head when he talks about this next generation. They don't have anybody that they're going to be able to look up to. Kobe's about to get out of the league. And some of these other guys that play it the right way, and now you have your LeBron James type guys. And I hope to God, I'm going to make my kid hate LeBron James, because he'll be playing when my kid's born. So I'm going to make sure they hate LeBron James about like I do. But let's flip over real quick before we go and we get out of here. Cuervo, are you going to do a show later?
You know what? It wouldn't allow me on Sonny's program, his channel. I wasn't able to set one up, so no, I guess once we're done here, that'll be it for the night.
Well, if you do, let me know. Roger probably has a show or something available, and Sonny hasn't done one today, so I think it might let you cancel, delete that show, and recreate another one, or just edit the time if it gets a chance to. But I want to hit baseball real quick before we go, if y'all don't mind, guys.
Of course.
We see everything that's happening. I just want to tell you my surprise team so far in the Major League Baseball, and they came out of nowhere to me. And, Jonathan, you probably know who I'm about to say, but the San Diego Padres, man. I mean, these guys are 35-34, only 2 games out of the West. I mean, tell me, is this a shock to you that the San Diego Padres are where they are now? Because I'm totally floored.
It is. I am stunned with how well their pitching staff has been. They are phenomenal at home this year with a 22-14 record. And Jason Marquis has been a pitcher where he'll go through years like this. I mean, I believe he's 8-2 right now. You have Edison Volquez who's pitching actually pretty well. The Padres are really surprising me. It's nice that, you know, and it's nice to see the Padres do well. It really is. Just like when the Orioles won, you know, did great last year. You always want one team come out of the cellar and perform well. You really do. I mean, that's the whole underdog mentality. That's why we love March Madness and college football. And it's great. You know, I just hope, you know, I don't know if the Padres can sustain it. They're in a very tough division and a very tough league. You know, the NL Central has 3 40-game winners. There is no wild card coming from anywhere else unless you know, these other teams catch fire. So, you know, it'd be nice to see the Padres sustain it, but I just don't see it, man. I think they're the Pirates of last year.
Yeah, you look at these divisions, like you said, the NL Central, I mean, it's loaded right now. St. Louis is best record in baseball, I think. But let's look at the Atlanta Braves, Cuervo, right now, 40-28, 6 games up in the NL East. But the one thing that stands out to me is how good they are at home. 22-8, Major League Baseball's best home record. They played 30 at home and 38 on the road. Cuervo, I mean, tell me about the Atlanta Braves. Any shot they have of making a big postseason run once they get in there? Because I do believe they're going to win their division. But do they have the team that's capable of making it to a World Series?
I mean, I think they can. Brian, I mean, it's all just going to depend on their pitching. As we all know, pitching is boss in the playoffs. You got to make sure your pitching is doing well, and that's why the San Francisco Giants won last year, because Lincecum started pitching well at the right time. Matt Cain was pitching well at the right time. And,
Zito.
You know, things went well for them, and that's why they won.
Yeah, I like the Atlanta Braves, what they can do at home, but I am worried, guys, being here in Atlanta, just seeing this team, they strike out way too much. I mean, it's depressing some nights. You can see after a couple of innings how the Braves are going to do. I mean, they can make you look like a Cy Young pitcher out there almost if you catch them on the right day. That's a team that mm-hmm. – but once the – I'll tell you this, once July and August come and it gets real hot here in Atlanta, I mean, they start tearing the ball cover off the ball, and that's one thing that people forget about in Atlanta. It's a big home field advantage when you play in Atlanta. You come down, you play in this humidity and this heat. And I think the Atlanta with a 6-game lead now, that's big. I mean, that's a pretty big lead, and I think they're only going to get better as the season goes on. But we'll pay close attention to the Braves. But, Cuervo, you're the Los Angeles Angels right now, and really you spent all that money, and you're only 4.5 games really better than the Houston Astros, which are in the cellar of that division. I mean, really? I mean, did you ever expect the Angels to be this bad?
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't expect them to, you know, exactly, you know, be the blow them out of the water type team either. It is a little disappointing, though. 30-39 right now, 11 games out of the division. I think that just once again, it just proves it's not about how much money you spend and all that. It's about, you know, a group of guys that know how to play together and play well together. So, you know, I'm surprised that they didn't learn their lesson from some of the past Yankee teams. You know, it's not always just about spending all that money. You know, you gotta have guys that are hungry to win. And, yep. You know, these guys in L.A., obviously the record shows that they're not very hungry.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be an interesting – the AL East right now looks like a real tough division. I mean, all four – there are five teams in the division, and the last-place Toronto Blue Jays are only 4 games below 500. So, to me, that's still anybody's division. It's going to be awesome to see. You have Boston playing good. The Yankees, they're trying to get healthy. The Orioles, a very well-coached team with Davis hitting a home run every day out of his mind. And Tampa Bay, your team, Jonathan, still 36-33, only 5 out. That's a team that could make a run at it, especially late in the year. Toronto, I think they're close. I mean, they could make a run at it. I doubt it. But I'm interested to see the AL East. But before we go, Cuervo, start it off, anything you want to say in closing here?
Let me think. No, nothing specific. Just happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. And, you know, like I said, Game 5 tonight, NBA Finals. It's going to be the best game of the series, in my opinion.
Definitely. Johnson?
Actually, I just got a good bit of news yesterday. Professionally, I am now actually writing a weekly college football column for gridironfans.com. So if you guys want to check that out and read my ramblings and make sure, you know, I don't sound like a fool, that'd be great. But, yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, yeah, that was a bit of good news for me. And Alex Cobb, who was hit with a line drive in his right ear yesterday in the Rays-Royals game, he was just released from the hospital. Luckily, he sustained just a mild concussion. He should be able to come back within 2 weeks.
Cool. Well, congratulations on that, Jonathan. I'm very interested to read your work. Make sure you publish the link and everything and the articles on our Way In Sports Facebook page as well, so all the listeners can see until they get accustomed to where you're going to be at and everything, so they can make sure they get your articles.
Of course. And Wednesday is going to be my – I'm going to publish my first article Wednesday. It's going to be a preview of the Atlantic Coast Conference. And then I'm doing the Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and SEC. I'm doing it alphabetically, not how much I dislike, just to put that out there right now.
Well, how about this? Wednesday night, then, on our show, we'll read your article and everything, and we'll let you go over the ACC. Kind of go over
that it. That'd be fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, Brian. I mean, thank you.
Well, Well, you're very welcome, man. It'll be awesome to have you. And next Sunday night, Coach Dana Robinson from My Recruit Video is going to be our guest. I mean, if y'all haven't heard him before, he came on last year. Real good guy. He's up in Chicago, Cuervo. That's where he lives, and I don't know if you've heard of him or not. But a great guy. He works with these high school athletes and gets them recognized, gets them in front of the coaches, gets them a scholarship, really. So he really has a good relationship with a lot of these collegiate coaches. And he has the best interest of the kid in mind, which is one thing I really admire about him. And you can tell genuine guys from guys that are just out for the dollar. And after talking to him and reading his stuff, and actually read the testimonials on myrecruitvideo.com from these guys, how really grateful they are to a man like that that looks out for him. I'm really excited to have him on. And we're going to have J.C. Sherbert on very soon, the head of recruiting at CBS, and Tom Luganville from ESPN is going to be on. So I'm excited to have these guys on to talk some college football. And Cuervo, thank you very much for joining us. Cuervo is the co-host for That Being Said with Sonny Clark, the couch potato. Always good to hear from you, and next time we'll make sure we hit on some NFL football more.
Definitely, Brian. I appreciate you letting me on today. Thanks for setting everything up, and you know, we'll get on campus on there soon. We'll probably start in July, start doing some preseason top 25 predictions or some bowl game predictions and things like that. So I definitely look forward to it.
So tell us on your own on campus with Cuervo segment. What days are you going to try to do it on? Are we going to do it like we did last year and do Fridays, mainly Friday evenings, or are you going to wait till Saturday to do it?
I get, it all depends on my schedule, because sometimes I have to work on Saturday mornings. But if I'm available, I would rather do them on Saturday mornings. If not, then we'll knock it out Friday nights.
Yeah, Jonathan, in case you don't know about that show, go hit up a couple of previous episodes on that. We did them last year. Cuervo did a great job getting all that together, and we talked football, just straight college football, preview all the games, and then, you know, the next week we'll review some of the bigger games. So it was fun, and I'm excited to have you do that again, Cuervo. I'm excited to hopefully get to join you if you allow me to. I really love to talk college football with you guys, and Sonny made us look foolish sometimes last year, didn't he?
Yeah, with his, you know, and we're gonna have it again next year. Sonny's crazy pick of the week, the one that I declared crazy. He's gonna have his crazy picks of the week. And Jonathan, again, if you go back and you listen in the archives, man, I mean, he was picking things like Stanford over Oregon, which I think actually happened. I mean,
yep.
We were just like, what? But he was right. So, I mean, there were some times where he was right, and it made us look foolish, like Brian said. So, but it's going to be good, you know. We do all the, you know, the big games. I do Heisman updates, who's in the Heisman race, who we think should be in the Heisman race, and just other, like, news and stuff like that. So that's what I cover on that show.
Yeah, it's an awesome show. So, Jonathan, make sure you go check the archives out of that. It's some very interesting stuff. And guys, we're close. We're like 74 days away, something like that, from college football. It'll be here before we know it. Cuervo, I hope to get to meet you in Knoxville when we're at the Auburn-Tennessee game. You know, that'll be fun. But hopefully all of us can get together one day and let's meet in the location, do a show together, and just meet up. But we'll see y'all Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern time. And like we said, Jonathan's going to come on and talk about his article he wrote about previewing the ACC. So really excited to hear that. So, guys, y'all have a great week. Happy Father's Day, and take care and enjoy Game 5.
You too, Brian. Take care.
Take care, guys.
Woo!
To be the man! You've got to beat the man!